A very good morning to you. Comment lines are open if you want to get through to us on 091-770-077 and 53995. I want to go back to the St. Brendan's home situation and the Seven Springs facility there. So if you've been following this, we've been talking about it for too long at this stage. But kindly enough, I've been given the timeline, St. Brendan's timeline, and it's quite a comprehensive document, so I'm going to summarise what's within it. But all of this started on the 25th of September 2019. Inspectors found that the provision of dining space for residents required review. An inspector observed the dining experience in one of the units. The space was limited and could not accommodate comfortably the residents who were present having their meal. This aspect had been identified by management and staff, where there are future plans to increase the space provided. No interim measure, such as provision of additional seating area, has been implemented to meet current residents' needs. The HSE responded and they said identified improvements will be actioned. On the 6th of January 2020, we go to now, residents, an unannounced inspection by HICWIS stated that residents continue to be restricted in relation to their choice of dining area. The dining area in the centre are small and do not accommodate all the residents in the centre. This is an ongoing non-compliance which is due to be addressed by December 2019. I'm going to go on though now to the 5th of August 2020, another unannounced inspection by HICWA, and again direct quotes from the inspection report. The residents were very complimentary of the food. The daycare centre area was used to facilitate safe communal dining on the day of the inspection. Significant improvements were noted by inspectors since the last inspection. The action plan submitted by the provider following the inspection of January 2020 was completed. The daycare area of the centre was not in use for daycare due to COVID-19 restrictions. Residents of the centre were using the large daycare room for dining and group activity. The feedback from residents, their families and staff was very positive in relation to having access to this added space. And it goes on, a review of residents' access to the daycare function room in the centre is required to ensure that it reflects the function documented in the centre statement. The HSE responded indeed to the events raised by HICWA, and it said a review of residents' access activities and dining space has taken place and arrangements have been put in place which currently include utilising the daycare centre, which has been closed since March 20 as a COVID measure, as an interim measure while a long-term solution has been implemented. All residents have now access to adequate dining space and high levels of activity. Now, that was the 5th of August. On the 13th of October 21, another unannounced inspection by HICWA. And again, they said Seven Springs, the daycare area of the centre, was now used as an additional space for dining and residence activities such as cooking and baking. And then the HSE on the 10th of the 3rd, 2022, issued the following email to HICWA requesting recommencement of daycare in the Seven Springs facility. The arrangement put in place in St. Brendan involving making the Seven Springs daycare area available to residents and staff to facilitate social distancing and for activities and dining during almost a two-year period, that the Seven Springs area was available for dining for residents. It was observed that even where the residents came down to the Seven Seas area and engaged in activities that they chose to, as their preference, was to return to the area they resided in for meals and eating in the dining room, small room, or their bedroom as they chose. And then on that date in question, let me just go back and give you that date in question, the 10th of March 2022, the HSE said, the Seven Springs will be returning to its core purpose as a daycare centre in the coming weeks. On the 25th of the 4th, HICWA responded by saying, in the context of repeated findings of how insufficient communal and dining space impacted on the lives of the residents, the regulatory engagement to date and the HSE's repeated commitment to implement a longer-term solution to address the identified issues, the stated intent to revert to using the space in question as a daycare space is not appropriate. On the 9th of May 2022, HICWA held a meeting with the HSE, registered provider as they are, of St. Brendan's Community Nursing Unit, and the matter has been escalated And it's a quote from Hickwa's report now. To Breida Crehan Roach, in her role as chief officer, due to the serious concerns of the chief inspector. And again, since July 2020, the residents have had exclusive use of the space previously used for daycare services. This has had a positive impact on the residents' quality of life and was reflected in subsequent inspections. It then goes on to say that Breida Crehan Roach advised the as the registered provider, it did advise them indeed and asked for clarification regarding the breach of regulations as the two recent inspections of the centre had been compliant. The Deputy Chief Inspector of Hickwa explained that if the registered provider proceeds with their stated intention of reverting to the previous level of communal and dining space, they will be in breach of the Health Act of 2007 due to the non-compliance with Condition 4 of registration. The Chief Inspector also said that they will take action pursuant to Section 51 of the Health Act 2007 as amended to attach a condition preventing the registered provider from providing daycare services in the designated area. Sticking with the 9th of May event, it goes as follows. Again, the Chief Inspector further clarified that if the provider does not intend to use the space for daycare services, it will remain available for exclusive use by the residents and there is no issue whatsoever. Clarification is required from the provider as the representation stated otherwise. And then it goes on from there, and Breida Crehan Roach confirmed that a response will be submitted by close of business on the 13th of May 22. And from there, it goes on. Hickwa then came back and responded for a request for a limited daycare service one day per week. And again, it goes on from there and goes on from there. When it comes down, indeed, to the 24th of the 10th, which is only last week, when Breida Crehan Roach joined me on the programme here, and where she stated on the interview, we had to address this lack of space, or otherwise we would have risked losing accreditation for up to 100 bedded unit CNU, which is Community Nursing Unit. We would love if we could use Seven Springs, but we can't. That's part of the regulations. We have to comply with the legislation and the regulations. So that's just a timeline of it. And this is a very brief summary. I'll put the whole lot up on a line from there. That was put together indeed by a number of people, but Kieran Cannon was the one who put that together. Deputy Cannon, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
It fairly well clearly states there, no matter what other people say, what I said day one, what Breida Crehan Roach didn't say, because she couldn't really say it. I mean, this was all controlled by Hickwa.
It was, Keith. And I just thought it was exceptionally important in light of what's happened over the last 2 weeks in particular, that we get accurate information out there into the public domain. And let's be clear here, Hickwa is a completely independent entity, independent of the HSE, independent of government. The legislation that underpins the establishment of Hickwa sets that out very clearly. It has one key and clear function, is to regularly inspect and maintain standards in healthcare facilities across the country, be they private or public. And we're all aware of, you know, inspections by Hickwa in other locations where ultimately that inspection has led to the closure of a particular facility because it wasn't complying with the necessary regulations. So that is the environment.
And rightly so, by the way.
And rightly so. Oh, and rightly so. I mean, yeah. you know, if Hickwa had been in place 20, 30, 40 years ago, an awful lot of the really tragic circumstances that were, you know, now form part of our history wouldn't have happened, because we would have had that very strong, robust regulation and inspection regime in place. So that's Hickwa's function. And they made it very, very clear, as you outlined in that timeline, as far back as almost 3 years ago, that the dining space and the recreational space available to the people who live in St. Brendan's was not sufficient. And Breida Crehan Roach outlined to you last Monday that the building, even when it was constructed, it was very limited in its space. And now, certainly in the year 2022, Hickwa have established that the residents who live there need to have access to that additional space. And it also, that what you just read out, Keith, makes it very clear that the HSE management, who I would argue have acted very appropriately and trying as best they can to strike that balance between the needs of the people who live in St. Brendan's and the people who regularly access St. Brendan's for daycare services. But the HSE themselves, as recently as the 10th of March this year, they told Hickwa, we now intend fully recommencing the daycare service in the Seven Springs space. And they were expressly told by Hickwa, you cannot do that. If you intend to do that, you are putting the registration, the accreditation of the whole facility in jeopardy. And that's why HSE had no option but to temporarily relocate the service out of St. Brendan's. That's what they've done. And, you know, I've been working as best I can with them. They're really good people doing a very difficult job trying to engage with this very robust and regulatory environment, and which we've pointed out is more than appropriate. Okay. And they've acted in the best interests at all times of the people who live in St. Brendan's and the people who regularly access that daycare service. And I just want to keep, because there's been a lot of inaccurate information out there, some of it deliberately placed in the public domain, some of it inadvertently, but it's out there. And I really thought, so I spent the last 2 days engaging with HICWA and the HSE to get all of the documentation that was exchanged between the two entities over the last 2 to 3 years. And that document is the result of that, Keith.
Okay, and that's the summary here. Can I just go back though, because I mean, one of your political colleagues did say on this very programme during the week, that the Seven Springs facility, that daycare facility that it once was, should not have been included for registration. Does that, you know, forgive me, does that make sense to you? Because I don't know how HICWA operates.
When they describe being included for registration, what's included for registration with HICWA and every healthcare facility of that nature, be it a community nursing unit, be it a private nursing home, be it a hospital, they're all obliged to register with HICWA as a registered provider. And in that registration, they actually have to provide, amongst many other things, a floor plan of exactly the area or the space that is seeking registration. And HICWA obliged a very long time ago, the HSE, when they were compiling that floor plan for St. Brendan's, to include the Seven Springs daycare facility within it, because it essentially formed part of the building and the residents that live there regularly accessed it. I mean, I've played music on many Christmases in the Seven Springs daycare facility with friends in music, and we would have people who are visiting the daycare service, but also people who live in St. Brendan's coming in for that music session on maybe a week before Christmas. We'd have a bit of a sing song, a bit of a dance. So there was that regular movement and flow of people in and out of Seven Springs.
So they had to include Seven Springs in the registration.
Exactly. Okay. And then subsequent to that, Keith, HICWA, post its two inspections, and after that, what is technically termed a warning meeting. It's a very serious matter for HICWA, the regulatory authority, to call a warning meeting, but they did with the HSE and said, you must continue to include the daycare, the Seven Springs space, now as part of the full hospital provision. And they've done that, and they remain obliged to do that, which is why exactly when they sought to resume the daycare services in the Seven Springs space, that Seven Springs space is now no longer available and will never be available again for that purpose. Okay. It is now fully subsumed into the life of the hospital and the people who live there.
So that kind of draws a line of that. Now, the big problem now is there's a lot of protected buildings around there, and Breda Crandon Roach did say in that interview with me last Monday morning that they were looking and assessing all types of options, and indeed, as part of that, I know that there's funding available to it. But how quickly can this get through estates, and how quickly can the conversation with the Topping Trust and all of that take place to provide this much-needed daycare centre?
Okay. We cannot deny for a moment that Breda Crahan Roach and her team, their sole ambition was to retain the daycare facility on the St. Brendan's campus.
Well, they actually asked HICWA to do that. And HICWA said no.
And HICWA said no. So now the ambition is to get the service back to the St. Brendan's campus in another location on that campus. And the work to establish where exactly that might be is happening as we speak. You mentioned the Topping Trust there, and people may not be aware, but a wonderful woman who lived adjacent to St. Brendan's all of her life long. Upon her passing, left a very significant legacy to be spent on the residents and on the welfare of the people who live and access St. Brendan's. There are resources there to do exactly that. The Topping Trust and the HSE are now in collaboration. That's exactly what they're doing. I happen to be, there are three trustees of the Topping Trust. I'm one of those trustees. And we walked the campus with Breda Crahan Roach and colleagues 3 weeks ago to look at every single possible option. And that has been since narrowed down now by Breda and the HSE Estates team. And we're now meeting again shortly, I'm hoping in the next 10 days or so, to finally decide on which facility is suitable for that repurposing. And that work will then get underway immediately, Keith. Our ambition indeed the Trust and the HSE, is to get the daycare service back to St. Brendan's within the shortest possible time frame.
Okay. All right. Again, thank you for putting that document together. It's a very comprehensive document that anybody, I mean, are you going to put that up on social media? Can anybody get access to that?
Yeah, anybody that wants access, I'm more than happy to email it to them. It's a very long document. It won't actually fit on social media, but it's I'm more than happy to email it to anyone. I'll be emailing it today to all of the public representatives who work in our area, both at national and local level, so they can be aware of how we've arrived at where we've arrived at. And so that it kind of, it sets aside, Keith, all of this kind of animosity that has become just part of the debate in the last couple of weeks, which it didn't need to happen. We all need to be working towards one goal here, is that ensuring that we have there in the St. Brendan's campus right now a state-of-the-art hospital, and indeed many other very, very high standard of healthcare provisions. There's an excellent primary care centre there as well, operating at the St. Brendan's campus. What was a rundown, almost derelict facility 20 or 30 years ago is now just a wonderful campus with so much healthcare provision on site there. So getting the daycare service back should be everyone's sole ambition now. So let's all work together towards that outcome. And I'm confident that, you know, certainly I'm hoping in the latter part of next year we'll be cutting the ribbon on a fantastic new daycare facility on the St. Brendan's campus, which will serve the needs of our elderly for many, many years to come.
All right, so it's going to be a quick turnout. Somebody wants me to ask you, what is becoming of the 10 vacant rooms in St. Brendan's? Can you ask Kieran Cannon, are there 10 vacant rooms there?
The St. Brendan's and Breda Crown Road last Monday made it very clear, Keith, that St. Brendan's is not operating at full capacity. I think she said something of the order of 79 patients in 100. You said it was about 75% capacity.
That's right.
That's simply a staffing issue, Keith. And it's a staffing issue not unique to St. Brendan's. It's affecting the whole of the health service. And the HSE, HR people are constantly on a recruitment drive to get people into nursing and other staff into St. Brendan so they can operate. But that is the only reason those 100 beds aren't full, is because there simply aren't people right there now to staff them.
And again, if they fill those 10 beds, the first thing HIC would do is slap them down if they don't have adequate staff, because that's
correct.
That's the way it operates. Exactly. All right. Yeah. Deputy Kieran Cannon, thank you for joining us today. But again, if you want to get a copy of that, we can arrange that it can be sent to you from Deputy Kieran Cannon's office. So you just make contact with Siobhan, or indeed with Darren on the desk outside, and we can arrange that from there. 10:28, the comment lines are open if you want to get through to us. A very good morning to you.
Galway Talks in association with Tesco. Tesco in Drevaughan is now open.
Now, very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. Now, just in reaction to the piece we did with Mary about traffic, Councillor Alan Cheevers has called us. Councillor Cheevers, good morning to you. Yeah, your thoughts?
Good morning, Keith. Yeah, my thoughts is I have full empathy with Mary, and I listened to the interview thoroughly. I suppose this is not the first time I've heard this from a member of the community. I think it's obviously something that's a huge issue, and I suppose what we need to do now is to try to address what we can address, I suppose, in the short term. We can talk about ring roads and we can talk about park and ride and all these different transport options, but the reality is, Keith, that they're not going to happen for a while yet, and that's the truth. I think we both know that. But I think that, you know, if we look at the short-term solutions, how we can improve traffic flow. Now, I have to be very frank that regarding Tedford Road and regarding the Kerwin Junction, all I can say about that really, and I'll be very honest about it, it's been an absolute disaster. I mean, there's been a lot of money spent on it. It hasn't worked.
Why are you saying it's a disaster, can I ask you, Councillor Cheevers? Give me the stats that it is a disaster, please.
Well,
I don't disagree with you, but please, you're a public official, so tell me why it's a disaster.
Well, basically, in my view, if you look at the whole traffic flow through it, I mean, it's very badly signposted. I mean, basically, the residents that I speak to who use cycling say to me that it's more dangerous now than it was before it was done.
And so all of this is anecdotal evidence that you're putting forward as being...
No, this is a fact.
A disaster.
This is 100% fact. And any public representative that you speak to will tell you the same thing, bar none. And I would say that I would put it to you that if you rang any public representative in Galway City Council at the moment, especially the likes of Councillor Frank Valley and people that live in the area, they will tell you the same thing. Mm-hmm. They're getting representation after representation every day of the week in relation to this. And if you look at the Martin Junction, I mean, the only positive thing I can see about that so far is that the actual footpaths going from Roscommon to Uisge Junction up to the Galway Clinic to make it safer for residents to access the Galway Clinic. But in general, so far, it's been very, very poor. And I mean, the correspondence and communication with the council has been very, very poor. Okay. And that's the reality, Rakeet. And your listeners will know that. I mean, only because I brought it up to the council myself over the last couple of weeks, they've actually sent out a letter to the residents of Roscommon and the residents of in the area to tell them why the delay and when, but they still haven't given them an end date of when it's going to actually finish. So listen, what I would say is, I'm not here to bash the transport section of Galway City Council. What I'm here to say is, they seem to get all the smaller projects fairly well, do the smaller projects fairly well. But when it comes to the bigger projects, there seems to be an issue. And I mean, we've seen this with the two junctions that I've just outlined. But what we can do in the short term, I think, Keith, in relation to what Mary was talking about, is if we look at the traffic light sequencing, I think that really needs to be a full audit done on the traffic lights right across the city. And I think that Galway City Council also have an obsession with traffic lights. And what I mean by that is, if you look for where I live in Roscommon, going right out to Thorntill, there's 18 to 19 sets of traffic lights. Now, for me, if you want to get traffic flow going in a city, right across the city, I mean, in my view, that's too many sets of traffic lights. And I know we need pedestrian crossings, I understand that. But still, I think that, you know, from my view, that's too many. And secondly, I think the sequence of the lights needs to be improved as well. Like, there's areas there, for example, in my own area in Roscommon, whereby when the green light comes on, you get two or three cars can get out, and then you're back to red for about 4 to 5 minutes.
Okay.
So things like that can be improved to get the traffic flowing better across the city, in my view.
You're the councillor, so can I throw it back to you just to see what you can do about the traffic flow and come back to us, and just come back to us with a report next week as to, you know, traffic volumes, traffic flow, and just come back to us. I didn't realise 19 sets of traffic lights between Roscommon and Saltail. I will count them because I'll be on that road today. Councillor Cheever, thank you indeed for joining us today on the programme for your input. Let me go to Dave O'Connell, who joins me because the Connacht Tribune is out since early morning, and Dave joins me on the line. Dave, good morning to you.
Morning, Keith.
Listen, your lead story is on a crisis in the classroom over the lack of teachers.
Yeah, this is primarily at second level, with graduates opting for jobs in the Middle East in particular, but it leaves principals in a difficult position to replace, well, retiring staff, or obviously staff on maternity leave or parental leave or out through illness. So it's a particular problem with Irish teachers. So I presume they're not teaching Irish in the Middle East, but also teachers of Italian, Spanish and German, as well as home economics. And there's a lot more on that story, which, as I say, is on the front.
Good stuff. Now you're looking forward to the county football final in sport as well today.
Yeah, no more than yourselves. Mike Cullen against Saltill, Knocknacarra, loads of close ties between the two Westport clubs over many years, not least at intercounty level currently, where you have the likes of Rob Finnerty, great pals with Mike Cullen's Desi Keneally, and indeed the Kelly brothers. But we were talking to one man who has played for both clubs, Rob's dad, Anthony Finnerty, the former Mayo footballer. And there's a full preview as well. Also loads of coverage ahead of the hurling quarterfinals, not to mention Dunmore's intermediate football final win. Clifton's in the junior final. It's a busy time of the year, and it'll be busy again next week, Keith.
Absolutely. Now there's another group of Galway soldiers heading off to Lebanon. God bless them.
There sure is, and let's hope they're safe. Led by College Road man, Lieutenant Colonel Damien Murphy, he's in charge of the 340 Irish personnel, 90 of those based in Renmore Barracks, 63 of them are Galwegians. It's his seventh tour of duty overseas and his fourth to the Leb, and there's a full piece with him and also some great photographs of their passing out parade this week. But staying with the Army, and we've an obituary of a man that I wished I'd known, Dermot O'Donoghue, who was just 51 when he died. He was given a full military funeral in his native Oranmore. And when you read his story on page 26, you'll discover really the meteoric rise of a man who joined the Army as a rank and file soldier, rose through those ranks to the role of chief instructor at the cadet school of the military college. He also, talking about overseas service, he was in the Leb, Liberia, the Congo, Kosovo, Syria. But it's the way that his Army colleagues speak of a man of the highest integrity that underlines what a loss he is to them, but even more to his young family and his parents. Way too young, but life lived to the full.
Absolutely, and a fine young man. You have a spread on the story of the Conquerors. A lot of work went into this, and you have a lot of photographs to go with it as well.
Well, I mean, it is, you know, they say a photograph is worth a thousand words. There's a photograph of one of the incarnations of the band in their flares, their satin suits and flares. And it is so evocative, as you know, because you had a great session with them on the program during the week. For those that missed it, though, the Conquerors are, they're now officially Ireland's oldest band. The Indians were for quite a while and the Conquerors a second, but the Indians are no more. As I said to the lads last week, it's the Cowboys have taken over. From the Indians, but no, not at all. So they have two nights next week, next Tuesday and Wednesday in the Galmont. And I know they went down a storm on your show, and they go down a storm everywhere they go. But as I say, it's worth it just for the photographs alone, the satin suits. I hope that Tony Marr has kept his, and that he dresses up the current lineup in them next week. I'd love to see Paul Vignoles in one of those suits. But as I say, officially Ireland's longest established band, but there's a fair bit of road left in them yet.
Absolutely. So that's Tuesday and Wednesday night of next week. Now, what else have you got in today's Connacht trivia?
There's actually loads in there, Keith. Front page pick is of a group of TY students from Art School Wirra in Ballinasloe with a calf called Soother, who was raffled for East Galway and Midlands Cancer Support. And they bought the calf. We did this story before, but this is the follow-up on it because it's a great end result. They bought the calf for €300, which they raised by selling ice cream around the school. They put the calf and many other prizes up for raffle during the October or during the Ballinasloe Fair. They now have come up with a final total of €3,820, including a donation from the calf winner, Father John Garvey, who took the money instead of the calf and then put the money straight back into the pot. And to finish it all off, Soother is now on the Dunn family farm because it was Caoimhe Dunn's idea in the first place. So the calf has a safe home surrounded by all of the TY students that raised all of this money for such a great cause. So everyone a winner on that one. The final chapter for a man, a native of Inishark, that an inhabited island off Inishbofin, to which Peter Joe Corrigan returned on his final journey last week to have his ashes buried in home soil. And our old friend Heather Greer has written a lovely piece to go with that. A great man called Pather Nugent, who has never missed a Dublin City Marathon since it began back in 1980. He'll be there again this Sunday at the age of 79, despite having surgery on a severed quad that would have done for a lesser man in the last year. And he's determined to go again next year when he's 80. Judy Murphy was in Claddaduff talking to three generations of one family, all of them artists who showcased their talents at this year's Clifton Arts Festival. It's a great story from Margaret Irwin West, who is still producing new work at the age of 96. Along her, also talking to her children, Richard and Catherine, and her granddaughter, Manon. And all of Galway's nominees, both writers and book shops for this year's Irish Book Awards. And there are loads of them, thank God. So we're still reading books and still producing great writers, and we still have great bookshops.
Absolutely. And thank you, Neil, for that. And again, if you want to pick up the Connacht Tribune, pick it up in your local newsagent or go online and buy the... It's full today, so it is court case and otherwise as well. So pick it up or else go online. If you're listening to us abroad, just go to the Connacht Tribune website and you can download it and just pay for today's edition or the year's edition as well. 10:42, back up to these.
Galway Talks, in association with Tesco. Tesco Father Griffin Road, opening on the 3rd of November.
Now, two subjects before the 11 o'clock news. One of them, I'm going to the heart of Connemara. The other is two events taking place and two books taking place as well. But I want to go to Pádraig McDiarmid there, who's a very bright young man, I have to say. And he has a very special event taking place this coming Sunday, the 30th of October, at 10 o'clock in the Dromahlin. And he joins me on the line because what he's doing is he has put together an audio trail, and it's an open day as well, which is very interesting. But he joins me on the line. Good morning to you. How are you today?
Good morning, Keith. How are you?
I'm good. How long are you working on this audio trail, can I ask you?
We're working on this, I suppose, for toward the end of last year, Keith, 2021, Fall to Ireland had a program called Digital That Delivers, and it was based on recovery from COVID, I suppose, trying to marry technology and tourism. Mm-hmm. And you had to come up with an idea that would attract the tourism, but it would also have a technology content to it. So that's the idea that we came up with, was an audio tour whereby the actual scanning of the QR with the technological side of it, but the tourism side of it was an appreciation of where you actually stood or where you were.
But there's a wealth of history in that general, in the islands. But I mean, who put the history aspect of it together? Who put the information aspect of it together? The QR code is one thing, but it's the content that's key on this.
Well, yes, the history. Well, again, the content is made up of a bit of history, a bit of geography telling you where you are and where you're standing and what's around you. There's a bit of legend. There's a bit of lore, and generally stories about what people were talking about for 200 or 300 years. You know, it's nothing heavy. It's light. And it's just generally something that will give you a lot more information about the place that you're standing, and just a touch on the history. But again, there was research that had to be done about where you were getting your source of information as well. So that had to be verified, of course.
And I know, I mean, there's a lot going on with seaweed in that whole general area as well. There's a lot going on in that area, so there is.
There is indeed, yes. We have the seaweed centre and we have the seaweed baths, and also in the open day we're going to have, where people can come in, we're going to have stalls and a craft fair for the local people as well, those that are finished their tour or are waiting to take the tour. And we have a spooky, scary Halloween cave as well for the kids. And it's a community effort, Keith, and we're trying to make the place a more livable or a more exciting, I suppose, to live in, and where when there's things happening and when there's things to do, the place the place is alive, and people going around doing their business. It's great in the summer because the people are visiting anyway, but this time of year you need to work on new ideas and new projects.
Somebody wants to know, will the audio trail, is it Asperla Agus Gaeilge?
It's Asperla Agus Asgreilgi, Keith. You will have an option when you download the app that was put together, by the way, by a local lad, a young fella, Felim O'Coolan. His company is Ilan IT. Of course, I didn't know much about the technology side of things, so he put the bones, or he put meat on the bones of the technology side of it, developing the app. But when you download it, you will have an option to go the English route or to go the Irish route. So Asgreilge or Asperla, it'll be totally up to yourself.
So it's all free on Sunday. They can go along. Where should they be at 10 o'clock then?
They need to be at Chapel Little Mullan at 10 o'clock for the first tour. And we'll have a minute. If the day is raining, and I don't think the weather's promised to be great, Keith, so we will have a minibus available whereby people can do the tour on their own if they want to by downloading the app from the Play Store or the App Store, and taking the tour themselves by scanning the QR code.
Okay.
Or they'll be able to go on the minibus where they can hear it through the audio of the minibus as well. So, or they can, if the day is fine, they can walk it, or if they have a bike, or how you do the tour is totally up to yourself. But
where's the best place to get information then? What website should they go to?
www.theseaweedcentre.com. And again, if you want to reserve your place on the bus, you get an option of reserving your place at a 10 or 11 or 12, 1, 2 or 3 on the bus, because there are spaces limited, of course.
And
so you can reserve your place by going to the website and get your place reserved on the bus. Yeah.
And it's free?
It's totally free, Keith. Yeah.
Okay. TheSeaweedCentre.com. Thanks, Cindy, for joining us. And congratulations. It's a great facility to have. And again, just go into the website of the Seaweed Centre and get further details as well there. It's a great facility to have. It really is a powerful facility to have in the region. So we wish everyone the very best of luck. Porrig McDermott, Goramila Margots, and thank you for joining us today on the programme. Now, I want to go on just before I go to the 12 o'clock news. Peter Cosgrove is Managing Director of FutureWise, and he wants you to future-proof your career at the Galway Science and Technology Festival. And he's giving a talk on future-proofing your work for Galway Science and Technology Festival. And he'll be doing that in November. But he joins you on the line, so he does today. Peter, good morning to you.
Morning, Keith.
Good. Thanks for joining us today. Again, science, it's the new gold, isn't it?
Yeah, well, science and technology is probably was seen back in my day as kind of just one discipline, and actually now it's every discipline. I think if COVID showed us anything, it was without technology, nearly all businesses, whether it was retail through to technology and science, weren't going to work very well.
So your event is, the festival is taking place on the 24th of November, and your event is taking place on that day as well at 7:30 p.m. Who can go along to it, can I ask you?
So there's a topic, there's an event in the morning which is for students, and that's at 11:30. And that's kind of to give them an idea of everything from the type of jobs they do, how they do it, you know, kind of the jobs and technology, but also all the types of jobs that they probably aren't aware of. And then there's a second one in the evening for parents. Students can come along to that at 7:30 in the evening. But really what we're trying to do is get people to understand that, like, the world of work has changed so much. You know, 20 years ago I was told, don't speak to strangers. Well, now we've got social media. I was told, don't get into a stranger's car. Sure, now we've Uber. And I was told, don't go to a stranger's house. And now we've, like, Airbnb or Tinder. So all those old rules, Keith, have kind of gone. So what we're trying to highlight to students is talking to your parents may not always be the best idea when it comes to what your career should be, because the careers that are happening now, some of the fastest careers in the world, didn't even exist 10 years ago.
So go to the experts and bring the parents along and convince them to let them do what you want to do, be it in the science field or technology field.
Yeah. So it's to give a lot of people an understanding that often people think, well, I'm not a computer programmer, so this isn't for me. But what people need to understand is it's technology plus people skills. You know, I love the idea that a few years ago somebody looked around, so this is all about looking up, and they saw the cinema movies seemed to be longer. They saw that people's drinks in cinemas were bigger, so they created something called the Run Pee app, which told you the best time to run to the toilet and not miss a key plot twist in the movie. Now, that takes someone clearly who knows technology and app development, but it also takes somebody who understands people and behaviors to understand that's what's going on. So really the future isn't just technology on its own, it's understanding those key skills you have, people development, to make sure you always have a job, because we keep hearing that robots are taking a lot of them. But so we have to understand the people side, but also the technology side.
And is there an app for the cinema like that?
Oh yeah, it's called the Run P app. Yeah, you can download it now. There's also another one where if people want to run faster, people notice that people love zombie movies, running's very popular. You can now download an app that as you're running, there are zombies in the background running after you, and bizarrely, it actually makes people run faster. So it's the same idea. It's looking at apps, but also looking at what the trends are at the moment.
Maybe you should listen to your parents with the apps coming in the background. Listen, the event is on, as we said, the 24th, but they can go to the Galway Science and Technology Festival. Tickets for the event are just €5, so just really, it doesn't even cover costs indeed. But if people want to go along, they can do so. We might get you in. When will you be in town on the 24th of November? What date will you... Are you coming down that day?
I'll be there pretty much all day, because I'm doing an event first thing in the morning at 11, and then I'm doing one again in the evening, so I'll be there all day.
Do you know what we'll try and do? We'll try and get you in that morning, so we'll, if you're coming down that day or other, the previous day, we'll get you in, because I think this is going to be great fun. But I'd want to be eyeballing you to see, will you tell me lies or not now? You know, I can't be believing all of this type of stuff.
If I'm a real person, yeah, absolutely.
Are you a bot or not? Are you a bot or not? Did you tick the box for me?
Exactly.
Peter, my people will talk to your people, and we'll all talk together, and we'll see if we get you in on the morning of the 24th of November as well. Listen, well done to you. Peter Cosgrove, Managing Director of FutureWise. Further details from the Galway Science and Technology Festival. And again, further details can be had from there. And again, if you just want to put it in, the event is on the 24th of November, again, morning and evening. Let's head towards the news desk. A very good morning to you.
Galway Talks in association with Tesco. Tesco Athenry, opening on the 3rd of November.